The views and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Novant Health, Nemagy, or Optum.
Welcome to The Shift, RCM Talks, where we share actionable insights from industry leaders who have firsthand experience and knowledge in revenue cycle. The revenue cycle management industry is evolving rapidly, requiring professionals to adapt quickly to new trends. Revenue cycle professionals no longer have the luxury of time. Our content delivers critical information in short episodes that you can use and share. We'll provide you with quick insights, help you navigate change, improve performance, and lead with confidence. Please join Bill Eichest, Valerie Barkoff, and Heather Dunn as we continue our commitment to make revenue cycle fun, informative, and collaborative. I hope you'll join us. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Shift, RCM Talks. My name is Bill Eichest, Senior Business Development Executive with Nemagy. I'm joined today by Valerie Barkoff, Senior VP of Operations, Revenue Cycle Transformation at Optum, and Heather Dunn, Chief Revenue Cycle Officer with Novant Health. And our special guest today is Murray Ford. Murray's here in Atlanta and Vice President of Revenue Cycle with Grady Health System. So Murray, welcome.
Thanks, Bill.
Valerie and Heather, always good to be with you guys again. This is our third episode of The Shift, and we really appreciate the feedback that we've gotten on our first episodes. And today we're going to dive into a topic that I know everybody's been hearing about and trying to make some sense of, and that's the One Big Beautiful Bill Act signed on July 4th of 2025. There's a tremendous amount of information out there about what the impact is going to be on healthcare. And so today, in the short time we have together, we hope to give you some action points as providers on things that you can do to help best position you and your organization for the impact that is anticipated to come along as the result of this. So let me just start out with each of you. Valerie, if you don't mind, I'll start with you. Just share some of your thoughts on what you're hearing out there from people on where it's going to really impact them the most.
Yeah, I was very thankful that Murray agreed to join us today, because as we are all trying to unravel this one big, beautiful bill and what it means for us, I know that we are trying to prepare for an onslaught of uninsured and underinsured patients, and wanting to really put into place different tactics to make sure that we're protecting not only the revenue of the providers, but we're also advocating and helping the patients. One of my biggest fears is that we're going to have patients who are choosing to roll the die and because they're losing their credits to go uncovered with insurance, maybe they're going to delay their health care and we're going to see their health deteriorate. And I really just don't want that to happen for any patient. And I do believe that we are in a unique position in the revenue cycle to try to put things in place to help protect our patient's financial journey as much as we can and protect the patient, the health of our organization. So that's some of the stuff I'm hearing. We're all just trying to unravel it, but expecting uninsured patients to go up, underinsured patients to go up, patients who maybe had decent health care because they had the credits, choosing to have high deductible plans, and us having to chase the patient responsibility more in the future.
Yeah. Heather, how about your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. You're going to see an increase in just your self-pay receivable in lots of ways going up. I would say it's also an opportunity for revenue cycle to really take a leadership role in your hospitals, to think about how you can turn this lemon into potentially some lemonade, right? So I think one of the ways that we're going to focus on this is patient outreach. Instead of waiting for your patient to show up in the emergency department, waiting for your patient to miss their appointment and then end up in your emergency department to stop coming in to do preventative care, I think we have the data that will really point us to a population of patients where we can start doing some outreach. And we can start thinking about that at-risk population and offering maybe some lower cost services, a telemedicine visit, just a phone call check-in to say, how are you doing? And, you know, what did you decide to do with insurance? How can we help you, you know, through that financial journey with a navigator, trying to put those preventative measures in place to help mitigate the impact of those patients coming to your emergency room, right? I think it's a good model for how patient care should be delivered for everybody, right? So I think I see this more of like half glass full than glass empty. So I think it's really challenging our system to turn its mind toward the preventative care than it is just to providing care once all patients come in. But this crisis really will point us to a group of patients, I think, that need the most upfront handholding, sort of concierge, you know, thought through their financial journey as well as their clinical journey.
Yeah, yeah. Murray, let me pass it to you. You just did a really great job recently moderating a panel for Georgia HFMA with some panelists that were really well represented. We had HFMA in the room. We had the Georgia Hospital Association on the panel. We had a gentleman, Jimmy Lewis, who represents Hometown Health and really an advocate for the rural facilities. And then, of course, Ryan from your organization, who's over government affairs, just lended some really good perspectives. I think we learned a lot about what the impact might be in Georgia, but talk a little bit, if you will, from your perspective on just in general, maybe what hospitals, regardless of what state they're in, might need to pay some attention to.
Yeah, sure, Bill. HR1, or One Big Beautiful Bill, the impacts are very nuanced. It really depends on your state, whether you are an expansion state or not. The impact will depend on the capabilities of your state Medicaid program and those folks managing the Medicaid program, what sort of technical capabilities they have. So there's a lot of nuance there. You know, for example, if you are an expansion state where you stand to lose a lot of people from your Medicaid roles because you've got increased work requirements and so forth, I think the question there is, how do you keep track of those folks who had eligibility and maybe struggling to maintain eligibility just because of the administrative hurdle of, you know, re-enrolling every 6 months, you know? And so there are some tools out there, and, you know, Heather alluded to kind of a concierge service for that group of patients. You know, how do we leverage, you know, our state Medicaid program, our CMO partners, or even, you know, third party business partners that may have the ability to sort of keep track of those folks and kind of where they are in their eligibility, and, you know, reach out to them proactively. So the patient may not have a visit in your organization, but they know that the patient just lost Medicaid because they hadn't gone out to their state's version of the re-enrollment system, and reaching out to them, hey, are you having problems? How can we help? You know, do you need a password to reset? Any number of things that can happen. But really, you know, to Heather's point earlier, being proactive about trying to get folks kind of captured again into that system. If you're not an expansion state like Georgia, for example, you know, we're looking at this in different ways. For us, you know, direct payment programs and the impact of a reduced Medicaid roster, and, you know, that's top of mind there. The other thing is that the One Big Beautiful Bill didn't address the enhanced premium subsidies from the Biden administration. And so we're really focused on that and what that impact is. You know, we're doing a lot of things, you know, locally to try to boost those numbers and, you know, protect the coverage of the folks that have it presently, but it's going to be a challenge.
Talk about briefly some of the representatives that you've put in place on the front end, boots on the ground, so to speak, of at the facility, the coordinators or the advocates when the patients come in the door. You had talked a little bit about that in our prep time.
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, we're looking at, and we've done this for the past 2 years now, but I think this year, especially with the headwinds that we're all facing, really leaning in on this concept of one, we've sort of, you know, tiered our financial counselor department. So there's kind of, you know, a tier one and a tier two now. And so our tier twos are all getting licensed as certified access coordinators through the state exchange. And so that allows them to have conversations with patients about their coverage options, sign them up on the state exchange. And so that really helps, you know, reduce some of that burden that patients may face with having to go out and seek professional advice to get signed up for an ACA plan.
Love that you guys Great. Are doing that. I mean, that really just is one of those, I think, ideas that other people should really think about and incorporate having those. It creates a job ladder for your financial counselors, and it really benefits the patients too. So to me, it's a win-win. From the employees have a career ladder now that maybe we didn't have before because we've got opportunities. And then you're really being an advocate for the patients and helping them maneuver through a very complicated program.
Yeah. A couple of the things that I wanted to mention, again, from Murray's panel that are important for people to think about. And then we can talk about some of the additional resources that are available out there. But, you know, there's a threat, obviously, to 340B revenue, right? Murray or Valerie, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, 340B is just one of those elusive areas in One Big Beautiful Bill. It's not directly addressed there, but if you kind of think about, you know, the broader impact of reducing Medicaid, you're going to reduce 340B potentially. And so, you know, if you're, again, in an expansion state where, you know, your Medicaid rolls increase by, you know, double digits or so, you may have facilities now that were 340B eligible that may not be after this change. And so, you know, one of the things, you know, we were all chatting about earlier is, you know, to what extent are there opportunities out there to engage your patients who may be uninsured with, you know, potential Medicaid eligibility. Like for us, you know, we are looking to improve the manner in which we outreach to our ED discharge patients. We don't oftentimes have those conversations about Medicaid eligibility, but there may be opportunity out there. And so we're going to pursue that. And I'm sure, you know, especially if you're in an expansion state, you know, those opportunities may be there. And if you're on that bubble of 340B eligibility or not for a facility, that may be the make or break move that could save that eligibility.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would highly encourage folks, if they haven't already done so, to start doing the what if scenarios with, if we see our Medicaid eligibility go down, if we are on the bubble and we start to have our dish go down, what is the potential impact? And to your point, I totally agree that we should be really focusing our efforts, if we haven't been, on Medicaid eligibility for those patients that are coming in through the emergency department. That is where we're going to see the increase for patients who are uninsured or who, you know, who have lost their coverage. And I think that's the opportunity that we need to kind of pivot to, besides just doing inpatients. And I know you're leading the charge over there, Murray, is really focus on those ED patients and how can we move them to be covered? Not only because it protects the hospital, protects our 340B, but it's just the right thing to do with them.
Right.
And there's also other potential funding sources for these patients that are not just Medicaid. I mean, I think thinking through, you know, other means to help those patients to get payment for their services, to even, you know, find housing, to find employment. You know, there are agencies out there that would welcome, you know, working in partnership with your hospital to do that. I think don't leave that as, you know, untapped, right? To match those patients with the right types of funding sources may just, you know, could be as easy as just including your IT team, right, in this process to say, can you build us an algorithm that takes some of these social determinants of health, matches it up with our payer plan table, and then says, hey, look, these are at-risk patients. Here are ones we think we need to target for, you know, telemedicine visits versus, you know, ones we have to target for just, you know, are you still able to keep your employment? Do you still have a place to sleep? You know, do you have food? I think this is a great opportunity to start melding together some of those different resources and really showing that health systems can treat patients in a different way, right? Up front and in consideration of all of those data elements we have available to us.
I love that idea. I love that idea. Just over, you know, the past, you know, 5 years or so, all of our nonprofit health systems have really created robust financial assistance programs. And so whereas folks may be losing coverage, they are going to get financial assistance, right? So the cost shifts from maybe the federal government or the payer onto the provider in a greater way. And I love that sort of innovation that you're kind of describing, looking at, okay, our cost structure for a virtual visit is, you know, maybe $75 a visit as opposed to a, you know, $2,000 ER visit, and just, right, you know, managing that cost by getting folks into that free virtual visit to keep down those ER admissions. I like that.
Yeah. there's a lot of logistics that still have to work themselves out. I mean, it didn't all go into effect July 4th, but, you know, there are things, some things are going to roll out. And we even discussed on Murray's webinar that, you know, there could be some things that scale back once the you know, legislators see what the actual impact is. But I think it's important to emphasize too, make sure that your organization's voice is being heard, you know, collectively. If you have an opportunity to get in front of, and not just email or send a letter to you, if you have an opportunity to get in front of some of your local legislators and really help them understand what the impact is, you know, that's going to be so important. You know, if all of us, regardless of whether, again, we're a large system or a small rural facility, we all know that this has got to be especially stressful for the rural community. And Jimmy Lewis said that, you know, it really just comes down to cash flow for those folks. And it's just going to be very important to make sure that you don't have leakage anywhere. I would say, you know, double down on eligibility as well, and make sure that you're finding coverage for as many of your patients as you can. And don't just put all of your stock in necessarily in the front end solutions. You know, there's just so many opportunities out there, and it's important to look at those. So I know we're coming up on time. Any final action steps, you guys, that you would offer to our listeners before we sign off for this episode?
Yeah.
Well, I'll jump first. I will say that there's this great TED Talk that I've always talked about, Eddie Obeng, and I love him. But one of the things that he mentions in his TED Talk, hopefully I'm giving the credit to the right person, is you cannot solve the problems of the future based on lessons learned from the past, because that past no longer exists, and that's where we are. So I think as much as we can really think about the what-if scenarios, what are we expecting to happen, and how can we start putting things in place? So we've got to think a little bit differently, because what was real for us last year and 2 years ago doesn't exist anymore. So turn on those creative juices, call people like Murray and Heather and you, Bill, and brainstorm and think outside the box.
I completely agree. Bring together a group of folks who think differently, who might attack this problem in a different way, because it's a new problem for them, and see what kind of solutions emerge, right? Whether that's a friend in the hospital or, you know, somebody inside or outside of healthcare that are doing things differently, ask for help, ask for a brainstorming session. I think this is a great opportunity to be innovative, to be creative, because things are squishy. And when things are squishy and you can't rely on the past, like Valerie said, now's the time to break the status quo, do something fun, do something different, do something that's innovative and can really help solve a patient problem, you know, in a really different way.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah, I guess I would say, you know, a lot of the provisions obviously taking effect, you know, 2026, some in 2027, some of the ones that we're looking at. And, you know, what I share with my team at Grady quite often is, you know, a quote that JFK mentions, the best time to fix a leaking roof is when the sun is shining. And so to the extent that the sun is shining in your area, you know, kind of get to work, be very deliberate, find a plan, get that group of, you know, thought leaders in your organization or beyond together, come up with them, but work deliberately to get something done.
Yeah. I would just add that I've seen a executive summary that the advisory board put out that goes into this in quite a lot of detail. Kaiser Family Foundation, kff.org, is a good resource. They have providing a lot of information out there. So yeah, guys, this was helpful. And obviously we're just encouraging our listeners to continue the conversation, to be vocal about what they're seeing as their challenges, not to be afraid to go outside of their four walls to look for solutions. I think that's very important. Let me leave you with a couple quotes for today, and then we'll sign off. Managers today have to do more with less, and getting better results from limited resources more than ever before. If we believe that tomorrow will be better, we can bear hardships today. So, you know, to Murray's point, keep plugging away and doing your best work, but get ahead of the curve and try to pay attention to what's coming down the road and adjust to it appropriately. You know, maybe the analogy of when I'm cruising down I-20 to visit family or friends, and I see on my ways that there's a police officer hidden up around the next turn, I appreciate that heads up, and it usually serves me well. So yeah, pay attention to some of the signals out there and some of the information that can really help you navigate this better. So I appreciate it, y'all. And Murray, best of luck to you and your team. We appreciate you taking time to join us today, and we look forward to future episodes of The Shift RCM Talks. Thanks, everybody. Best of luck.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.